The other thing that we've seen is that online shopping is more or less a sort of done deal. We found that the use of WhatsApp to enable online purchase.
Right.
So while WhatsApp itself is not a transaction platform, it enables the transaction.
Yeah.
And it is enabling a highly customized service that people are taking full advantage of. And that's what distinguishes small businesses from large businesses.
How does marketing continue to shift business, influence culture, and grow brands? To get insights on these and many other questions, we had the privilege of attending the IMC conference, which was themed Marketing is Business. In this IMC conference series, we spoke to creative industry thought leaders where we asked them some of the most pressing business questions. For actionable insights which can shift your brand communication, stay tuned.
We're joined by Stacey Jane Seggers, the Commercial Growth Director, Insights Division at Kantar. Stacey, thanks so much for making time after your talk to give us a little bit more insights on the Mzansi Barometer.
You are so welcome, Ungis.
So give us a bit of a sense of what has happened in the past year, because I know you released this year on year, and every year you get new insights, new findings from how people are engaging with brands. What are some of the key takeaways from the past year?
Okay, so at a kind of national sentiment level, we found that South Africans, concern around crime and violence has significantly increased.
Yeah.
Not that it wasn't big before, but it's even bigger now. Gender-based violence has also shifted up one position. And load shedding has obviously slipped down in the ranking of concerns. The rising unemployment rate is still really up there, as is the rising cost of living. So the significant movers this year were around crime and violence. The other thing that we've seen is that online shopping is more or less a sort of done deal. So last year, we found that 82% of the country that was connected said that they had ever shopped online.
Right.
And this year, close to 100% of those connected consumers say that they do shop online.
Okay.
There's also been a marked increase in township-based homes who shop online and lower-income homes who shop online. So it really is much less of a barriers to entry kind of discussion and much more a frequency discussion now.
What I'm also getting, I suppose, out of that is that the maturity rate of online shopping or connectivity has almost reached its peak, where the more connected consumer who's always been shopping online keeps shopping online, and they probably increase their frequency, but there's a new shopper now in townships who are also shopping, which is something we're finding in the Township CX report as well at Roger Wilco. One of the things I suppose that brings is, how do brands react to this data? Because you release this out there. What are you finding on the ground as you talk to brands?
They're learning in real time, right? So, I mean, at the sort of start of this evolution into online shopping, it was how do we connect with and democratize access to online shopping to the whole country?
Right.
Now that we've solved for that and we've got so many people online, we thought, okay, well, we being brands, we're thinking, how do we make sure that everybody is able to pay in using a platform that is accessible to them?
Yeah.
We've overcome that too.
Okay.
And now we're at a stage where, how do I make sure that my brand is visible to consumers when much of the products that they repeatedly purchase tend to go in a place for your common purchases? So we're needing to find ways to bring eyeballs back to the full marketplace.
Right.
So that consumers continue to see the broad range of offers available to them.
I mean, I remember last year, I haven't seen the latest one, but I remember that last year there was a big sort of uptick in cultural sort of adoption, or at least the requirement for cultural adoption from people shopping online. How has that changed once again over the past year? Because I think I remember it was especially women of color or something like that were indexing for one of the findings. I just can't remember well from the research, but I feel like there was something along the lines of a cultural...
I actually know exactly what you're referring to. What you were referring to, I think, is a program that Takealot ran in collaboration with the Gauteng municipal government.
Yes.
And at the time, so that was in 2024, they had just started the program, and it was all about how do we ensure greater access to online shopping within townships.
Yes.
So they identified well-known leaders within those different communities, and they empowered them with a credit card, and they used to shop on behalf behalf of their community. And then their home acts as a collection point for product. That was amazing because you sold for last mile delivery, right?
Yes.
So that was 2024. Mm. This year, there are up to 3,500 of those, which they call personal shoppers. And the program is currently expanding into other regions. So it has been hugely successful. And I think that it is also always a big contributor to the growth that we see in online shopping within townships.
Mm. What does that tell us about the evolution of the South African shopper? Because now the data that you're finding contextualizes the research. It contextualizes the data. It takes it out of the global scheme of any other research that comes out there. What are some of the things that you are seeing grow and change over time as you find out these insights?
Well, I mean, at the time, very few people had access to online shopping, mm-hmm. the time being around about the time of COVID.
Right.
We know that only 7% of South Africa has a credit card. And when online shopping started, that was your primary mode of mm-hmm. payment. In fact, I think it may have been your only mode of payment. And now we have so many options available.
Yes.
So that's one of the big changes. And people are able to pay in a way that they are comfortable with. You know what else we're seeing is the use of WhatsApp to enable online purchase.
Right.
So while WhatsApp itself is not a transaction platform, it enables the transaction.
Yeah.
And it is enabling a highly customized service that people are taking full advantage of.
Mm.
And that's what distinguishes small businesses from large businesses.
Yeah.
I have a really cool example.
Okay.
So there is a small like entrepreneurial brand mm-hmm. that make sneakers.
Right.
And it's really clever. So you can order your sneakers, and all three of those sneakers that you pick will come to your home, and you can choose which one of those you actually like and end up paying for just that one when it arrives. And then you send
that's
the
smart.
Other two back.
That's
it
smart.
Means you don't have to commit to the payment up front.
Mm.
And that's the key thing, because who has in their bank account three pairs worth of sneakers?
Yeah, 2,000 rand.
Exactly,
in cash. 2,000 rand a pair.
Right. So, and WhatsApp is enabling that transaction, and that is what is separating some of the entrepreneurial ventures from the big scale online offers.
So, of course, we are seeing this change. I mean, that's a great example, because we are seeing the evolution of industry to what people are looking for, or to what people kind of want, which is one of the things that you want, I suppose, as you gather this research. That said, though, there still seems to be a one-size-fits-all approach. I mean, with take a lot of example you used is a great one, because that is a very contextual one that's, would something like this work in a township, even though we are seeing the rise of delivery services that are coming out of townships that, you know, some brands are partnering with, and other brands that would use as a last mile delivery platform can also use but aren't using. What are some of the things that, if a brand out there is listening, and some of them are, what are some of the things that, I guess, out of this year you would say, if you do anything over the next year, these are the two or three things that you should be doing.
With specific reference to online shopping?
Anyway, I think the biggest insight out of the barometer.
I mentioned at the start, so I'm going to take a departure from online shopping and tell you what I really feel.
Yeah.
At the start of this conversation, I referenced some of the big concerns that South Africans have.
Yes.
And the fact is that the brands in this room today hold some of the biggest budgets in our country.
Mm.
And they really have the opportunity to be a part of solving for some of these countries' biggest challenges,
mm-hmm.
and some of the challenges that the consumers themselves who use those products are faced with on a daily basis.
Yes.
And I really feel that not having a voice in this space, despite the perceived risk that brands believe it carries, is as loud as saying nothing at all. And so I really feel that this moment right now is an opportunity for brands to be a part of the national solution.
Yes.
And to connect with their consumers in a way that is serving for everybody and not just the bottom line in revenue terms.
Yes. I think one of the other things that comes out of the Township Sex Report is that consumers feel, especially in townships, consumers feel as though brands don't understand them. So brands don't come into communities with the sole part of their purpose being to serve these communities, to make a difference in these communities. From the research you're finding, are brands proving to try understand the consumer better?
Oh, it's such a difficult question. I think that brands absolutely understand that they should be.
Mm.
And this is absolutely no excuse, because you know how much I love a understanding of consumers kind of piece of research. Budgets are being cut in every form And brands themselves are really struggling to find ways to connect with communities, to research the ways that they need connect with communities. That doesn't take away from the fact that the products that they're developing and selling are made for the community. Mm. So best you find a way to do it. And understanding just one sector of our country and not another, that's not on. So they absolutely do need to find ways, despite whatever budget cut excuses you hear, to connect with their consumers.
So I can't let you go before I ask this question, which I'm sure everybody's asking you about the, I suppose, I mean, this is a prediction and an opinion rather than something that's coming out of the research. What do you predict? How do you predict AI will change the space, especially in, among consumers who feel not understood, such as the person or a shopper in a township? Because, and I'm saying them because we've got a lot of data on the mature online shopper who's shopping all the time. So there's a lot of data to back what you can do with that shopper. Whether brands are doing it or not is another conversation altogether. But how can AI sort of accelerate either the understanding of the consumer, delivering better to the consumer who feels misunderstood or a consumer who feels underserved?
Sure. I mean, you're really asking about AI and research, right?
Yeah.
So there's a whole discussion around synthetic data, which, you know, there are camps that are for and camps that are against. But essentially what we're trying to do, we being the research community at large, is find more cost-effective ways of predicting how respondents might behave.
Yes.
The challenge is that it is obviously basing its findings on past behavior. Mm. In a world where everything is moving really quickly, there's very little opportunity to count on what people did in the past and rather the type of solutions they're coming up with for the future.
Yeah.
So that for me is a big caution in the space of AI, is relying solely on synthetic data. Mm. I had another point I wanted to make on that, and it's now completely escaped me. The one thing that AI is really helping us to do, though, is to assist brands to find cost-effective ways of running research, so long as it is supplementary.
Yes.
And I really do advocate for using things like norms databases, which AI research draws on, so long as you're not looking at it in isolation. Mm. We can't take our eye off the actual consumers and just continue to predict what we think they're going to behave like.
Yes.
So it definitely plays an important role. It can't be the only one.
Yeah. Because I think the thing you're mentioning about synthetic data, or at least the dangers of synthetic data, could be that we make predictions based on past behavior rather than to predict sort of future behavior and sales there. So, Stacey, we usually have a question that we ask our previous guests to leave for our next guest. One of our previous guests on the show was Musa Kalenga, the Brave Group CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And the question he left, which I think would be an interesting one to get your thoughts on, was, what do you deeply believe that you are often in disagreement with people about? So, in a nutshell, what is it that you deeply believe that most people don't agree with you on? Because so while you think, as a thought from my side is, because I follow your podcast, so you discuss our race relations at length, I think that is for me an interesting one, because I suppose we were talking before this, and of course there's a lot of disagreement where race relations are concerned and who has the right to talk about those things and how they affect people.
But I like what you did there. Just the laid the conversation. Beautiful.
I
think that's a really valid point. So I run a podcast where we speak about race and privilege, the realities of race and privilege in our country. And the reason we do it, and we make it really relatable, right, by using personal stories. And the reason we do it is because conversations about race and privilege tend to happen in siloed groups amongst people where you know your opinion will be welcome.
Mm.
But what we're not doing is taking that conversation national and using it as a means to connect with one another so that we're moving forward together rather than continuing this place of massive friction.
Mm.
There has been, so to answer your question with that as the sort of frame, there are a lot of people who don't believe that it is necessary to be so vocal. And people will say, well, that carries risk, or you're going to get cancelled or whatever. And maybe they're right. But I can't imagine that as a white South African resting on the privilege that I've had for generations, that it would be okay for me to not use my voice to speak on behalf of marginalized groups in spaces that I naturally have access to simply because I am a white woman in this country. And so that's a controversial statement in itself. And I really believe that whatever privilege you are holding, like when you walk into a room and the privilege is stacked in your favor, whatever that privilege is, are we using that privilege as a cushion, or are we using it to actually be a part of some sort of solution for our country?
Yes. Stacey, thanks so much for making time to chat to us. Now it's your turn to leave a question, so you can leave a question for our next guest.
Okay.
About, you know, their creative approach, creative process, marketing, the industry, or thoughts on life.
I would like to leave a question around what is somebody's favorite local podcast and why?
Unexpected, but interesting. Stacey, thank you so much for making time. I really appreciate it.
You are so welcome. Thanks for getting it.